Welcome to the Shir Shemi Shmuel Parshas Vayetzchanan. Wanted to take a look at tonight the Shemi Shmuel from Tov Resh Ayin Hey, that's 1915, which deals with the concept of tefillah. Again, we know that Parshas Vayetzchanan starts off with the idea of tefillah. Vayetzchanan al Hashem Vayetzahi. Moshe Rabbeinu says, I pleaded with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I supplicated HaKadosh Baruch Hu at that time to go into Eretz Yisrael. So it's not so directly connected to the parasha itself, but it's such a fundamental idea about tefillah that I thought it'd be appropriate to share it tonight. The Medrash Rabba, and it's also the Tanchuma, the Medrash Rabba for the second half of Bamidbar Rabba and Devarim Rabba is essentially verbatim the Medrash Tanchuma. Halacha. Every section of the Tanchuma starts off first with a halacha, and then an agadic discussion that follows up from the halacha. This is on page Lamed Hey for those who have a sefer. Halacha, Adam Yisrael, Shahaya Omer Mitzpalu, Jewish person is davening Shmon Esrei, Maushi Mutter Lo Mitzpalu to call Gadol. Should he be allowed to recite Shmon Esrei in a loud voice? Kach Shanu Chachamim. Right, so the Chachamim taught us that no, again as we know, Shmon Esrei has to be said in a whisper. Yocho Yashmia Kolo, might one think, thank you, that you can raise your voice while saying Shmon Esrei. Kvar Pirsho Chano, the mother of Shmuel Anavi already taught us that it says the Chano Himidaberes Aliba. Right, it says Chano when she came to the Mishkan to daven for a child. So she was medaberes aliba, she was speaking softly, she was whispering so softly that again, as we know, Eli HaKohen, who was there, thought that she was drunk and he reprimanded her and she had to come back and say, no, just realize that I'm davening and, you know, you shouldn't be alarmed by the sight that Rakhtvo knows that her lips were moving but no sound seemed to be coming out. Oh. Bakusha Vivueris. Right, so says the Shemi Shmuel. You know, there's a basic kasha when you put the halacha together with the story in Nach. Ad shatolome medivrei Chana, say ulamad me Eli. Okay, so Chana is whispering, and the words don't seem like they're coming out. We say, yeah, she's the prototype of what tefillah is supposed to be. That you just move your lips, but no one next to you is supposed to be able to hear you saying anything. Okay, unbelievable. So what did Eli think? Right? If anything, I would bring a proof from that story in the opposite direction. Obviously, to Eli, it was totally foreign that somebody would be davening and moving their lips, and the words would not, you know, be audible to somebody standing right there. Chana was clearly the exception to the rule rather than the rule. Alright, if it was the rule, if everybody davened Shmon Esrei that way, so Eli would have understood that she was davening Shmon Esrei. She was davening whatever she was doing. Right? So the fact that Eli was puzzled should be the biggest proof that that's not how you daven. Say Lamad Shah Eli. Shahoya Shofet Yisrael. Eli was the leader of the Jewish people. Moshe Rabbeinu Olav HaShalom, and he had a Mesorah going back to Moshe Rabbeinu, a tradition. He thought that she was drunk, right, because she was davening silently. The upshot of the story would seem to be that it was not normal to daven in such a way that the words were not audible to somebody standing next to you. The kach pirish Rashi b'makomo. In fact, Rashi explains that way. The imkain lama lo nelef mina sha'asr lispalo b'lachash. So shouldn't the takeaway from that story in the beginning of Sefer Shmuel be that not that it's obligatory to daven in a whisper, but rather that it's prohibited to daven in a whisper. In other words, Chana was the exception. All the rest of us should be davening out loud. Eli thought that they were davening out loud. What did Eli do that morning when he davened Shmon Esrei? Right? The implication of the story is that Eli davened out loud. So then, why are we learning from Chana, not from Eli? So comes the Shemi Shmuel with the following answer. Nira Lomar, the Tfilohi Bishnei Ofanim. There are two types of prayer, two types of tefillah. Yesh shehalev misorer b'tfilah. There's a certain type of prayer that we'll call the emotional prayer. It comes straight from the heart. As we just read in Eicha, just back on Motzei Shabbos, Tzoak libom el Hashem. Their heart, in Eicha Perek Beis, their heart cries out to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Kimachmas sarosav umitzukos libo misparetsis hatfila mikiros libo. A person can be in such tzaros, in such straits, in such difficulties, that there's a spontaneous emotional prayer that the person experiences. Again, in the beautiful words of the Shem Yishmuel, the prayer bursts forth from the depths of his heart. Right? It's emotional, it's spontaneous, it's not calculated, it's not thought out, it doesn't come from the mind, it comes from the heart, it comes from the emotions. That's one sort of tefillah. V'yesh shehatfilo ba'a machmas hadas v'haisponenus shemis orer lehispalel. Then, there's a second type of prayer, a second type of tefillah. We'll call this type intellectual tefillah, where the person connects to HaKadosh Baruch Hu not primarily through the emotions, not primarily through the heart, but through the mind, through understanding, through coming to a rational intellectual conclusion that I have to dive into the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's just as devoted, it's just as strong, but it's cool, it's rational, and it doesn't have that spontaneity and that emotion that we associate with the first type of prayer. Now, truth be told, right? Both of these two examples are too black and white. I mean, there's no such thing as a tefillah that, you know, that doesn't have any element of emotion, and there's no such thing as a tefillah that doesn't have any element of intellect. I mean, clearly every type of tefillah is a little bit of a shiluv. It's a mixture of both the emotional. Both types of, every type of tefillah is a mixture of the emotional and the intellectual together. That's true. Mikol makom, zo ba'a machmas mitzukas talev umo'eres etzamoach lachshov machshavos. But in one case, the tefillah starts in the heart and operates on the mind, right? In other words, what starts it off is an emotional attachment, you know, an emotional feeling of wanting to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And remember, the person starts thinking, okay, I guess I need to talk to God. The second type of prayer, which is more intellectual, starts in the mind, starts in the intellect. The person realizes, I must pray, and that intellectual realization then causes the person to try to drum up their emotions to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Meaning, we clearly have to connect to God on both the intellectual and on the emotional levels. The question is, what's the horse, and what's, you know, what's the cart, and what's the horse? You know, what's driving the tefillah? Is it emotion driving the intellect, or is intellect driving the emotion? And so far, he hasn't said that one's better than the other, right? Now, these are two types of tefillah. One type of tefillah is driven by the emotions, one type of tefillah is driven by the intellect. The yesh loma shemachmas mekar motzo hatefillah ime hamoach o me halev nolad hahefresh im belachash o bekol. The question of whether it's proper to daven silently or out loud depends on what type of tefillah we're talking about. And he goes on to explain. Ki alev hu cham, hu mispoel, hu molid tnua v'kol. When a person is worked up emotionally, there's a certain heat that the person experiences. There's a certain energy, there's a certain, you know, the person is wound up, you know, in a certain sense. And, you know, when you're wound up emotionally, you can't be silent. You know, you don't kivyachol walk over to the Ribbono Shel Olam and say, pardon me, would you mind getting us out of this terrible predicament in which we find ourselves? When you're worked up emotionally, you scream, you yell, you bang on the doors of Shamayim with every ounce of koach that you have. When the tefillah is motivated by emotions, So that's the tefillah, that's the kol, that's uttered in a loud voice. So hamoach hukar who built ibal tznua uvelachash. In contrast, when tefillah is motivated by an intellectual understanding, what we'll call a more rational type of tefillah. So again, when people are, you know, we know when we interact with people, right? Somebody gets very emotional, they raise their voices, they yell, they scream, you know. When somebody, you know, speaks to you rationally, so they're very quiet, they're very gentle, you know, they could be as forceful as the person who's yelling and screaming, but there's a certain calmness in their demeanor. So too, when we daven belachash, when we daven silently, that's the sign of a type of tefillah which is rational, which is intellectual, which is calm. Again, motivated by the intellectual realization that we need to daven, not by this heat of emotion in which we find ourselves. And then he goes on to share the following fascinating biographical insights into some of the great Chassidish Rebbes who preceded him. And we'll bring this to the Lower East Side, Bez Hashem, by the time we get to the end of this paragraph. Says the Shem Yishmuel, Al-Kein Akdoshim V'Atzadikim Hayoser Gedolim. This distinction, that when someone is rational and motivated by the mind, they tend to be calm and sedate, and that reflects itself in a calm, sedate davening, which is quiet. Whereas somebody who's motivated by the heart and by emotion tends to be wound up and yelling and screaming and the like. We find that the greatest tzaddikim, says the Shem Yishmuel, Shehem Bechinas Moach, who are really rooted in their intellect more so than their emotions. Mind you, this is a Chassidish Rebbe, right? Just bear that in mind. We find that the greatest tzaddikim who are rooted in their intellect rather than their emotion, Eniros mehem tnos v'stailos b'tfilosam. We don't see them making great gesticulations or getting very wound up on a physical level when they daven. Uvosneinu shomanu, for example, we heard ourselves, Shakodesh HaRebbe Rebura Mipshitzcha, Seichet Tzadik Livracha, Hayu Mispalel B'li Shum Tznua. Shem Yishmuel says that Rebbeinu Mipshitzcha, again one of the great Chassidish Rebbes of Poland, davened without any movement. He didn't shuckle at all. Elo Hayu Omed Kimo Amud Shel Evan. He would stand like a stone pillar when he was davening. V'rak Einov Zolgos Dumaos. But if you looked at him, you saw that his eyes were buckets of tears. Right? Clearly, you know, he wasn't Kalta Litvak. You know, he wasn't a cold, unfeeling person, the Rebbe Rebunim. But he stood straight, absolutely straight when he davened, no shuckling whatsoever. His eyes were streams of tears. Uquod kedushas avi admar zatzal sipim. My own father, the Avnei Nezer, says the Shem Yishmuel, told me, shebioso choler achmano litzlan, nitzava me'ez kivod kedushas zekeni ha'admar ha'godos zatzal mikotsk, listaleo b'rosh hashanah v'yom ha'kipurim ito imo b'chadro ha'miyuchod, sha'al beis ha'medrish ha'godo. Shem Yishmuel says, I guess towards the end of his life, when my Zayda, the Kotzke Rebbe, was sick, he asked his son-in-law, right, the Shem Yishmuel's father, the Avnei Nezer, to daven with the Kotzke in his special Rebbe room that was off to the side of the main base medrash on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. This is one of the perks of being a Chassidish Rebbe, is you get your own little room, you know, to daven in off of the Beis Medrash, so that, you know, you can daven without feeling the pressure of all the Chassidim watching you. So the Kotzke Rebbe in particular had such a little room that was his special room for davening. He stayed there, he asked Avnei Nezer to come in with him, I guess, you know, in case he needed some kind of attention, you know, in the middle of davening. This way his son-in-law, the Avnei Nezer, would be able to help the Kotzke out. V'lo ha'yoroa v'zikenis v'tzal shum tznua v'zpailus v'chol ha'tfila. And my father, the Avnei Nezer, told me that my grandfather, the Kovska, didn't move or display any, you know, obvious, you know, emotion at any point during his tfilos. Elaponov hayuboros kilapidim. But my father said that my grandfather's face burned like a fire, like a torch. Uchemaloch Hashem noro meot. And like the appearance of an angel of God, very awe-inspiring. I mean, again, clearly his lack of movement and shuckling was not a lack of devotion, right? The devotion was clearly there, but the Shem Yishmol is saying these great tzaddikim, everything when their tefillah came from their intellect, not from their not primarily from their emotion. It was all intellectual, and when you're intellectual, you don't have to display the sense of emotion that you have in such an outward fashion. You can restrain those emotions inside. Uv'sefer Yismach Moshe, HaKadosh Rav Moshe titled down Zatzal Yismach Moshe, right, the ancestor of the Satmar Rav, says Shizoi Bechinas HaTzadikim Sheheim Botei Gavoy. All tzaddikim are like this, says the Yismach Moshe. They're all inwardly focused. Bote gavoy. It's not the show on the outside. It's all inward. Umehem hoya Moshe Rabbeinu Olav Hashalom ve'Aaron. And Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron HaKohen followed this approach as well. Shebechol avodosam utfilosam lahoysa nikeres bohem shum tznuo v'espailos. Again, I don't know how you know this exactly. I guess the Yismach Moshe knew this, right? But if you go back to these greats, Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron HaKohen, they as well didn't act in a way where there was an obvious display of emotion or shuckling or anything of that nature. Their very rational, intellectual approach to Avodas Hashem was not imminently obvious to, you know, to somebody looking from the outside in, right? It was their avoda was all inside. What's that?
That's considered putting on a show.
What do you know? Well, you get the impression that he's not so far into shuckling, right? I don't know that he's saying one shouldn't shuckle, but he's saying that the great tzaddikim, that's what he's saying, the great tzaddikim when they daven don't really shuckle because everything is inside. Every thing comes from the intellect. Just to relate this to the Lower East Side, I mean, it's very well known. Probably people here know better than I do that Rav Moshe Zatzal stood without any movement during his Shemoneh Esrei, right? You know, no shuckling whatsoever. Obviously, Rav Moshe came after the Shem Yishmol, but if one wanted to add,
is there a preference which one is better? Combination of the both.
Again, so you know. One should do whatever gives one the best kavana for one's prayers. But the Shem Yishmol at least is saying that, you know, the highest way of davening is to daven in a way that it comes from the intellect, where one doesn't outwardly display in any way, you know, that incredible devotion that one has. It's all inward. It's all internal. Right, Rabbi Akiva, the Gemara says, would bow so many times he'd end up in a different corner of the room, right, when he was davening. So again, I don't know how that fits into his paradigm, but that's the paradigm he's drawing. And again, he's saying, you know, there are these two different types of tefillah, and a little bit he seems to be saying that the higher type of tefillah is the one that comes from rationality, from the intellect, as opposed, you know, to being driven by emotion. Again, fascinating that this is in the writings of Chassidus Sherev, right? We might have stereotypically thought that wasn't what he was going to say, but fascinating to see that that's what he says. So what do we do with this idea? Say dinim and tefillah, right? They're two different models of tefillah, the emotional tefillah and the rational tefillah. V'yesh lomar shema'ein zanami ha'hefresh bein atfilos ha'tzuros me'am she'knesses ha'gdolo she'hein tediros uvein tefillah ha'bo lifrokim le'ish ve'ish machmas yal de'yom. You know, before we even explain this line in the Shem Yishmua, we probably have to give a little bit of akdam, a little bit of an introduction. You know, there are two types of prayer. there's prayer Shachris Simcha Meiriv. The Anshei Knesset HaGdolah said that we're supposed to recite a set text three times a day in speaking to the Ribbono Shel Olam. But oftentimes we forget there's another type of prayer as well. There's spontaneous personal prayer. A person has a difficulty, so he turns to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Not that he says, Refoeinu Hashem v'nei Rafi. I mean, he says that also. But, in the middle, he's in the middle of a business transaction, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And, it's not Shacharis time, hopefully. It's not Mincha time, it's not Ma'ariv time. And he just wants the business transaction to succeed. Or Rachmana Litzlan, he's in a hospital with a relative who's incredibly sick. And he wants that relative to get better. And he just turns to the Ribbono Shel Olam and utters words from his own heart. Right? We sometimes forget that's what prayer is supposed to be about as well. It's not just, checking off. I did chakras, I did mincha, I did ma'ariv, I was a good boy today, I even did musaf, I wasn't supposed to do musaf, okay, I did musaf anyway. Right? It's not just that. Of course it is that. But a person is supposed to have a personal relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu where he or she just turns to Hashem when necessary, in their own words. So this distinction between these two types of prayer is somewhat analogous to the distinction between the intellectual prayer and the emotional prayer. Ki atfilo hatadira b'shmanesre tzricho lios machmas hisbonos haseicho v'amoach. The tfilos which are regular tfilos which we say, the shmanesre, that's more connected to the mind and to the intellect. Kol bracha u'bracha kama hinachutz v'magadu achistan b'ilado. We're supposed to be thinking with our minds as we go through Shemoneh Esrei. Why am I making a bracha? Baruch Aleinu Hashem Elokeinu Hashanah Hazos. Because taka, if the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't send the right agricultural conditions, we're all going to starve, right? We don't think of those terms, right? Why do we say Baruch Aleinu? I don't know, because it's in the Siddur. No, but if you didn't say Baruch Aleinu, if Ribbono Shel Olam didn't grant, water to the world to harvest, to enable the crops to grow, they wouldn't have all those fruits and vegetables in fine fare, they don't just pop up there. They come about because the Ribbono Shel Olam enables the crops to grow all over the world. So we need to daven in order to help enable that to happen. So before a person goes into daven, he should think about, wow, we really need this. I really need to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to bless us with das, with slicha, all the things that we ask for. We have to appreciate intellectually the need for all of the brachos. Ach tfilos kol ish v'ish machmas mitzukas levavo hitluya b'lev. But the spontaneous tfilos that a person utters, whenever there's in a situation when they find themselves just needing the Ribbono Shel Olam for this, that, or the other thing, that doesn't come from the mind. That comes from the heart. That's an emotional outburst that a person has when they need HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So says he, V'al kein tefillah kazo bo b'kol. We've already established that an emotional tefillah is connected to the idea of davening out loud. When you daven spontaneously because you need something, that tefillah should be out loud. Aval tefillah hasura kanal b'shibamach tzricha lios b'lachash. However, the tefillos which were instituted by the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, which is supposed to be motivated primarily by the intellect, so those tefillos are supposed to be b'lachash. They're supposed to be silent. They're supposed to be in a whisper. Why? Because the whispering denotes the intellectuality of it. A tefillah that stems from the intellect, like the tefillah Shemoneh Esrei that we say, should be said in a whisper. A tefillah that comes spontaneously from the heart at a time which is not a time of tefillah, it's not one of the times of the three tefillahs that we say, such a tefillah should be b'kol. That should be in a loud voice. Right? So, let's understand, according to this, the back and forth between Eli and Chana. Again, we ask the Kasha as follows. How come Eli didn't understand that when Chana davened in a whisper, that's the way you're supposed to do it? What did Eli daven that morning? When Eli davened Shemoneh Esrei that morning, Was he whispering or was he saying it out loud? If he was saying it out loud, so why don't we say it out loud? If he was whispering, so how come he didn't understand the phenomenon of Chana whispering? So says the Shem Shmuel as follows. Avada, the three tefillos of Shemoneh Esrei, the tefillos kvuos, the regular davening, which comes from the intellect, is supposed to be said in a whisper. The reason Eli had a hard time understanding Chana is because he walked in. He said, look, what do they think this is over here? Shomer Shabbos? It's not a time for a tefillah. Right? This woman is davening. She's obviously davening a tefillah mimemake alev. She's obviously davening spontaneously because she has the tzara. Such a tefillah should be bekol. I understand that a regular Shemoneh Esrei is supposed to be belachash, but I can't understand that a woman would, or anyone would, daven spontaneously for a personal need in a whisper, in a silent fashion. The emotional tefillah that comes from the heart has to be bekol. That's supposed to be out loud. If she's not davening out loud, there must be something wrong. Right? That's what Eli is thinking. Okay, then, what's Chana's answer? Right? So we gave such a good explanation, so what's Chana's answer? So let's just do this very quickly, and then we'll pick up a little bit more in depth after Meiriv. Chana, says the Shem Shmuel, was not just davening for a son or for a child the way most childless women would daven for a child. Most childless women would daven for a child. Ribbono shel olam, look at the terrible matzav in which I find myself, the terrible situation in which I find myself. I yearn for a child. I want a child. I need a child. They would daven from a state of emotionality. Chana uniquely davened for a child because she realized intellectually it was not just what she needed. She realized that she was going to be the conduit to bring a child into the world who would be the next leader of Klal Yisrael. She realized that. We know that Chana's song is Nevuah, right? The Chazal tell us that Chana was one of the seven Nevios, right? She was one of the seven prophetesses, right? So Chana understood that she was supposed to have a child who would be a leader of Klal Yisrael. She wasn't davening the way most childless women would understandably and justifiably daven. I need a child for me. Intellectually, she had come to the conclusion, I need this child for Klal Yisrael. So her tefillah to the Ribbono Shel Olam was not an emotional outpouring which would require tefillah bekol. It was a calculated intellectual decision which deserved tefillah belachash, just like a Shemoneh Esrei requires a tefillah belachash. We'll pick up on this point, Bez Hashem, after Marv, and elucidate it a little bit further. Rabbi Chanan ben Akasha, Omer Ratzak, Kodesh Baruch Hu, Lezachos Es Yisrael. Welcome to part two of the Shem Yishmol Shir Pashas Bo Eschanan. On page Lamed Hei, Lamed Vav, just to sum up what we had seen the first time, so the Shem Yishmol develops this idea that there are two types of tefillah. There's a tefillah which primarily comes about from the emotions, and there's a tefillah which primarily comes about from the intellect. The tefillah that primarily comes about from the emotions is rightfully recited out loud. The tefillah that primarily comes from the intellect is subdued, you know, is not obvious on the surface, and therefore is recited in a whisper. The three tefillos which we recite every day, which are instituted by Chazal, which are set, are supposed to ideally be tefillos that come, that are related to the intellect, that are motivated by an intellectual appreciation of why we need to pray. As such, they are uttered in a whisper. However, we're also supposed to have tefillos that are spontaneous, that take place whenever we're experiencing a difficult time. Those emotional tefillos, which are not tied to a specific time of the day or a specific format or the like, those tefillos are supposed to be bekol. Elaborating on that a little bit, the Shem Shmuel addresses the concept of Chazaras Hashas. You know, on the one hand, when we daven silently, we have the Shtilah Shemoneh Esrei, you know, the tefillah belachash, when we daven as a whisper, but on the other hand, at least for Shacharis and Mincha and Musaf, we have a concept of repeating the Shemoneh Esrei out loud. Now, you might be inclined to say, you know, don't make too much of that. I mean, after all, the institution of the Tefillah B'Tzibur, or the Chazaras Hashavs, is sort of, one could argue, a bidyevet, a less than ideal situation. Not everybody's going to be able to say the tefillah b'lachash, the silent shmoneh esrei, right? So by having the chazan say it out loud on behalf of the tzibur, this enables all of them to fulfill their obligation. You're right, really, the tefillah should be said silently, but what are you going to do? I mean, you know, you can't have the chazan saying it silently and enabling them to fulfill their obligation. That's not going to work, right? So you could argue that he has to say it out loud because there is no choice. However, the Shem Shmuel takes the position that the Chazaras Hashat is not just a concession to a reality, but it reflects a second dimension of the set prayers. And he says as follows. This is at the bottom of Lamed Hay on the left hand side. Machmash to be sad his bonin is hamach is Paul Gamalev. As he said, tefillah, which starts off in the mind and in the intellect, has an impact on the heart as well. You know, you're not supposed to just go in. You know, even the tefillah that's a rational, intellectual prayer is not supposed to be devoid of emotion. It's just that the emotion is brought about by the intellect and not vice versa. Al kein ba tefillah zo gam bekol b'chazaras hashat ha-tefillah. Right? So that's why even the set Shmoneh Esreis, although they're first said silently, they're then repeated by the chazan out loud. V'kol zehu b'tzibur davka shenis achdu malach volev. But the reason that we only do that b'tzibur, in other words, according to that logic, so we should say Shmoneh Esrei twice every time. We should say it silently to mark the involvement of the mind, and then say it out loud to mark the involvement of the heart. So he says, no, that full ability to combine the mind and the heart can only really take place when the tzibur, when the community is davening together. That's why it's a chazaras hashat in a communal setting and not in an individual setting. I should point out, it's very fascinating, you know, this idea that chazaras hashat is not just a concession to the people who don't understand, but that it serves a function of its own, is very, very similar to an idea that Rav Soloveitchik was very fond of, based on the Rambam, that whereas the tefillah, that, and we all daven together, belachash, is tefillah bitzibur, the Rav Zatzal said, based on the Rambam, that when the chazan repeats the Shmoneh Esrei, that's another dimension of prayer, that's tefillah hatzibur. That's the tefillah which is uttered by the tzibur as a tzibur, not just by the group of yechidim who come together, but by the tzibur as a tzibur, and it's qualitatively a different type of tefillah than the tefillah that said belachash, right? So that exact terminology is not used by the Shem Shmuel over here, but the concept, you know, that there's a qualitative difference between the silent Shmoneh Esrei and the Chazaras Hashav, that they're both addressing two different aspects of tefillah, is common, you know, to this idea that the Shem Shmuel is expressing over here as well. Anyway, let's go back to something we also spoke about, you know, during the first half of this year. So we said, we're trying to understand the exchange between Eli and Chana. Chana's davening in a whisper. Eli says, what you doing? So I don't understand. What did Eli do that morning when he said Shmoneh Esrei? Right? So according to the Shem Shmuel, so Eli said Shmoneh Esrei in a whisper. So why didn't he understand what Chana was doing? Because he said, Chana is davening emotionally from the depths of her heart. So she should daven out loud. For someone in that situation, she shouldn't be davening in a whisper, belachash. She should be davening out loud. I understand Shmoneh Esrei, you say belachash, but why are you davening in the fashion in which you're davening? So let's just give a little bit more of the explanation to that. Well, if he Omer Yuvan Hodechano, Dinei Eli Yoda, the Chano loved Tfilah stories, Pala Oz. Eli understood the Chano was not davening one of the set Tfilahs. Ki Hoys Baacharash Achilo Shtiyah Kamafurish Bakosov. Right? She davened after she had eaten and drunk, which is not She'ein's Zman Tfilah. That's not normally a time of Tfilah. Normally, you know, the set Tfilos are supposed to be recited before meals. Right? So here she ate first, and then she went and davened. So it tipped off Eli that she's davening something personal. The impression you get is that's true for women as well. I guess at least from his presentation. I mean, again, you know, you could quibble halachically, but that's his presentation. But oh, ki yir b'sol ispalel mashma yoser mikashir tefila asturah k'mafurish b'akosuf. Right, the pasuk says that Eli saw that she was davening a lot. Right, so at a certain point he said that's not a shmoneh esrei. She's there for 45 minutes. That's, you know, okay. Even if you say she just came back from seminary, but I mean, you know, that's a long shmoneh esrei. You know, that's not a shmoneh esrei, right? The al kain and the tefila protest l'fim mitzukas libo. He saw that it was a personal tefila. The al kain hayo bedin was found the call. Right, so then he says, look, she should be davening out loud if that's the case. That's why. That's why Kashva Eli Lishikara. That's why Eli said something must be wrong over here. She must be drunk. Aksiv. So what, again, what was Chana's perspective? It says, V'chana, he midaberes aliba. That's a very strange phrase. Chana was speaking aliba, on her heart. What does that mean, she was speaking on her heart? So the Pashut Pshat is that she was speaking in a way in which the words couldn't be heard. Right? The pasuk goes on to say, "Raks posen os." Right? Her lips were moving, but her voice couldn't be heard in any way. Right? But still, the phrase is a little bit odd. He medaberes alibo. What exactly does that mean? Says the Shem Yishmor, beautiful pshat. Mashma shahamoach diber al halev. Her intellect was moving her heart, and not vice versa. Speech is a function of our intellect. Medaberes alibo. Right? First, she conceived of an idea intellectually, and then the heart was moved as a result. The imkain makar motza filosa hayo mehamoach nitzad hisboninus hasdecha. What moved Chana to daven was an intellectual realization, not really, you know, an emotional realization. That's what we'll elaborate on what we said a little bit before, you know, in the first part of the Shia. Ordinarily, a woman, you know, doesn't have a child, she comes to the Mishkan of the Beis HaMikdash to daven. It's a tefillah that emanates, you would expect, it's a tefillah that emanates from a very, very raw emotional place. Ribbono Shel Olam, I want a kid, I want a kid, I want a kid. You know, like, she's making cheshbonos? No, I want a kid. You know, I want a kid. You know, it's the natural, you know, maternal instinct to have a child. That's, you would think that that's what's moving somebody who goes and davens for a child after years of being childless. Not so with Chana. And he quotes the following, that Rashi brings over there in the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, Hashem Spokos, right? Chana davens to Hashem, the Lord of Hosts. Lama is Yachid Shem Zekan. Why is HaKadosh Baruch Hu referred to as Hashem Spokos? Amar Lefanav, Ribbono Shel Olam, Shnei Tzivaos, Barasa B'Olamecha. You created two sets of hosts in your universe. The celestial bodies don't reproduce, they don't die, you know, they're eternal. Right? It's only things down here on earth, you know, the earthly hosts that die out, right? But they also reproduce. And yet what am I? If I'm a celestial body, so then let me not die. If I'm an earthly body, if I'm an earthly, if I'm an earthly thing, an earthly creature, so then let me reproduce. In other words, don't leave me in limbo. You know, we're not able to do anything. Al iske liba. Amr afan ribana shalala. Kol mashke barasa beisha. Lo barasa dover echel avatala. She approaches the ribana shalala and says, "Ribana shalala, you created everything in the human body, including the female body, and everything has a purpose. Well, if I'm not going to have a child, there's so many parts of me that are not going to serve any purpose." She davens to the ribana shalala. So, in other words, you know, says the Shem Yishmor, "Aveshet tefilas ha'isam yisponenes hamoach ha'aseicha." She comes not just pleading emotionally, she makes rational arguments to the Ribbono Shel Olam that he should grant her a child. Right? To this we added, again, you know, in the first part of the Shiur, that the ability of Chana to be rational about what ordinarily you would think would be an immensely you know, emotional and raw kind of experience that she would have, you know, the fact that she was childless, was because, again, Hannah saw her future child not just as something that she wanted for herself, she saw him as playing a role in the destiny of Klal Yisrael. And therefore, her ability to make these, you know, courtroom arguments, if you will, with the Ribbono Shel Olam, you know, these rational arguments with the Ribbono Shel Olam, it's because she had a rational, intellectual understanding of the role that that her child, that Shmuel HaNavi, was ultimately going to play. Her tefillah, thus, was uttered out of a sense of intellectualism and less out of a sense of emotionalism, which would normally drive, you know, somebody in that kind of situation. That's also the meaning behind that enigmatic phrase where it describes how she davened, Batispalel al Hashem. She davened an Hashem, not Batispalel el Hashem, right? Which, again, the Shem Shmuel understands means that if it was El Hashem, it's from her heart. Al Hashem is she mustered up arguments and, you know, the force of intellect to reason with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak. You know, the Chazal interpret Batispalel al Hashem, she ticha dvar klape mailo, which is usually interpreted in a somewhat pejorative sense. Literally, she threw things at the Ribbono Shel Olam. She threw arguments at the Ribbono Shel Olam. I think the Shem Shmuel is understanding that in a very positive sense. You know, she didn't just speak from her heart. She had reasoned, thought out, intellectual arguments for the Ribbono Shel Olam, why he had to grant her a child. And again, I think that speaks to her understanding that this was a child who was going to have, you know, much greater significance than just being able to take care of her in her old age. As great as that is, she understood that this was a historic personality that she was going to give birth to. That's why she davened silently in a whisper, because even though it was a tefillah that was not one of the set tefillos, it was a tefillah that came from a place of intellectuality. Right, so that you know, that's how to understand, you know, why she was davening the way in which she was, but also to understand why Eli, who presumably was also davening a tefillah belachash, when he was davening a set tefillah, was unable to understand her. I think, you know, just the part of the takeaway from the Shem Shmuel, first of all, is that it's important to recognize that there are these two elements of tefillah in Jewish life. I mean, for better or for worse, we're so used to the regimen of the three tefillos during the day, which of course is critically important to our Yiddishkeit, to our Avodas Hashem, but we oftentimes lose sight of the fact that there's this other dimension of tefillah, this tefillah that just, you know, just talk to God. I mentioned on Tisha B'Av a story a colleague of mine sent to me from the Chofetz Chaim. Again, I can't vouch for the veracity of the story. I was definitely not there, but the story that he shared from another source was as follows. Very, very poignant story. In the early 30s, Chofetz Chaim was nifter in 33, so, but in the early 30s, a young Jewish man was drafted into the Polish army, and he communicated with the Chofetz Chaim, and he said, basically, look, you know, Polish army is not the American army, you know. Shabbos doesn't look like it's going to happen. Kashrus doesn't look like it's going to happen. A lot doesn't look like it's going to happen. How am I going to hold on to my Yiddishkeit while I'm here? I want to, but it's just, you know, it's not going to work. I mean, I see that I'm just going to be forced to do many aveiros. I'm not going to really have the wherewithal to perform many mitzvos. What lifeline can I grab onto in order to preserve my connection to Yiddishkeit in the Polish army? So supposedly the Chofetz Chaim told him, look, do whatever you can. But, you know, bottom line, if there's only one thing that you can manage to do every day, at least every day, turn to the Ribbono Shel Olam and say something to him in your own words. Right? You won't have time necessarily to daven Shemoneh Esrei. You know, who knows what they're going to make you do there in the army. But, you know, you'll have time to be able to speak to Hashem every day in your own words. And when you do that, try to the best of your ability to face Eretz Yisrael. Because as long as the Jew has a connection to Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim, you're never lost. So part of the lesson of that is the eternal connection that we have with Yerushalayim, that, you know, even a Jew, often the Polish army, having no connection to Yiddishkeit. Chofetz Chaim said, if you daven towards Yerushalayim, that will keep you connected, so that when you get out of the army, you can resume a life of being devoted to Torah mitzvahs. I want to focus on the other aspect of what the Chofetz Chaim told him. Even if you can't daven a Shemoneh Esrei every day, right? At the very least, say something to God. Right? Don't forget about that aspect of prayer. There's another aspect of prayer beyond the set tefillos which we have. Talk to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Right? And the Shem Yishvol is reminding us of that fact as well. Talk to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And Adarabba, when you talk to the Ribbono Shel Olam, talk from your heart. Daven Shemoneh Esrei with your mind, but talk to the Ribbono Shel Olam with your heart. And therefore, whereas Shemoneh Esrei is something that you say in a whisper, because the mind doesn't need to yell, the heart needs to yell. You know, I'm not necessarily advocating coming into shul, you know, and just stop yelling. I mean, Baruch Hashem, we have enough people who do that anyway. But you know, when a person feels that they want to talk to the Ribbono Shel Olam, put your heart into it. You know, let your emotions, you know, rise to the surface. Don't be embarrassed. You know, you feel you have to cry out to the Ribbono Shel Olam in a way that's not going to embarrass yourself. So go into your room somewhere and do it in private. You know, nobody should hear you. But you know, don't lose that emotional connection to the Ribbono Shel Olam, which expresses itself through personal tefillah, even beyond the regular tefillahs which we say. Right, Tefillas Chana is on Rosh Hashanah. It's after for the first day of Rosh Hashanah. And on Rosh Hashanah, you know, the truth is one of the tefillos which we have, which very much is the kol, is the shofar. Right, people forget the shofar is a form of tefillah as well. It's a tefillah which is wordless. It's a tefillah which can't be balachas. Right, it's kol lishma, the kol shofar. And you know, that's in a sense the equivalent of the emotional outburst which the Shem Yishmol is speaking of.
Wouldn't being loud and slurring your voice, your words, wouldn't that be indicative of someone who is drunk versus someone who's quiet and under control? So did Eli call it the right way? I mean, when he interpreted what he saw, was that right or correct?
So it used to be, when you'd walk the streets of New York, you would see people walking around mumbling to themselves in a way in which you couldn't really hear what they were saying. And it used to be that you would figure out that those people were either drunk or crazy. Now you realize that they're CEOs and they're actually talking on a Bluetooth, right? You know, so they're not drunk, they're not crazy, and they're people that you probably want to get to know because maybe they could help you out. But once upon a time, before that phenomenon, you know, where people were walking around talking to them, so that's, I think, you know, he sees this woman muttering to herself. So he says, you know, she's, you know, shikara may be a euphemism also for a little, you know, a little not quite all there. You know, either she's not quite all there because of an artificial stimulant or because of something that, you know, is not going to wear off, you know, in the morning. But either way, something is wrong over here. What's that?
It sounds a bit.
Right. Yeah, but I guess he was being optimistic. I mean, you see somebody muttering to themselves, you hope it's only that they're drunk. Right? No, so Chana is Megala. It's the only time that we see what a set tefillah would be like. In other words, Ailey's only misunderstanding was he couldn't understand, you know, she's not saying a set tefillah and she's saying it belachash. But Bitoch HaDvarim, we see that a regular set tefillah should be belachash. That's the way the Shem Yishmol would understand it. Right, but that's the only place where there's any mention of tefillah belachash anywhere in Tanakh. Right? So through the back door, you know, in a backhanded fashion, we are learning it from her. Very nice. Very, very nice. Beautiful. Okay. Seems like she was the public area because that's where Ailey saw her. so as not to disturb other people. But people didn't really daven in the Mishkan. In other words, you know, it wasn't a shul. And it doesn't sound like she was there during a minion time or anything like that, you know, so... I'm sorry? I guess, you know, she could have raised her voice at points, you know, I mean, you know, if not too many other people were there and she would raise her voice from time to time, you know, so that would be appropriate, you know, but she was so silent that that it bothered Ailey. I guess, yeah. Yes, right. So he's assuming that it was three times a day. Again, we know that the Avos HaKadoshim already instituted Shabbos Mincha Ma'ariv, right? So the exact nusach of Shemoneh Esrei, you know, was instituted by Anshei Knesset HaGdolah. But again, Chazal say Shabbos Mincha Ma'ariv was instituted by the Avos, you know, by Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov. So by the time of Eli and Hannah, presumably there was some kind of tefillah kavua, even if it wasn't the Shemoneh Esrei.
I mean, was it during the day or was it at night?
It sounds like it was three times a day. It was Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov.
So
Right. So again, his understanding is that she wasn't davening at the time that would normally be associated with the tefillah. Okay, we'll pick up next week. That's Hashem. Chanan ben Akash. Only Rastak Kodesh Baruch Hu was Zachus to Yisrael.